Welcome to Parent Talk, the show for parents brought to you by the India Community Center. I'm your host, Vidya. As always, this is a live show and the call-in number is 510-770-1550. We spend nearly a third of our life sleeping, but that's an area of our life that gets so little attention. Today, we'll be talking about the importance of sleeping well, appropriate sleep patterns for different ages, and what to do if your child has trouble sleeping. Call in with your questions once again to the number is 510-770-1550. With me in the studio is Dr. Nitin Verma, Medical Director of the Washington Township Center for Sleep Disorders. Welcome, Dr. Verma.
Hello, thank you.
So why is sleep such a significant issue?
Well, that's because many people, especially in the last 100 years, have not been putting a priority on their sleep. You know, various stresses at work, in school, at all ages, we're not getting enough sleep in general, and often the quality is poor, and that can affect our health.
So what's the single biggest sleep issue that parents come to with?
The most common issue that parents will bring their children into our office, which is happening quite frequently nowadays, is that the children are having a hard time falling asleep at night, and yet they're too sleepy in the morning and falling asleep during the day. Mm-hmm. And it turns out there's a biological reason for that issue.
Okay. We'll explore that a little bit as we talk about sleep patterns in different ages. But what are the trends you're seeing? Can you elaborate on that? I know you mentioned that the biggest issue is sleeping later and waking up later, but are there some trends you're seeing over the time that you spent working on this issue?
Yes. So there's two things going on. One is that basically school is getting more rigorous. You know, when I talk to kids in school right now, they are definitely studying harder than I was when I was that age.
That's true.
And it's because, you know, just the sheer amount of homework people will get now, and the timing of school is it keeps them simply too busy. They have structured activities in the afternoon and evening. So many times kids are coming home 6, 7 p.m. and now they have to study for 2, 3, 4 hours. And now how can you get enough sleep? You're literally overscheduled. The other issue is that school, over the last 10 or 15 years, has started starting earlier and earlier. And
mainly
that's for the convenience of the parents and the scheduling, so people can drop their kids to school before they go to work. But again, if you're sleeping later, you need to wake up later, but this is working against kids in general.
Why do you think the school system, is the school system geared to a pattern of work on the part of the parents that doesn't exist any longer? Perhaps that's the reason why school is starting earlier and earlier? Or is it accommodating the work schedule of parents?
I think it's accommodating the work schedule of parents. You know, often school, if I remember right, when I was in elementary school and high school, I don't think school started earlier than 8:30, 8:45. And now I have kids that are starting really an hour earlier. So I'll have many kids waking up at 6 o'clock in the morning, and I personally would have had a very difficult time waking up that early at that age.
That's quite true. I had a question from a parent, and she said, how do I tell if the child is not sleeping soundly? I think my child may not be sleeping well, but short of standing there the whole night and monitoring how the child sleeps, how do I tell that? Actually, before we have that question, I guess we have a caller, so let's quickly go to that. Welcome to Parent Talk. Who's this?
Hi, I have a question.
Sure, go ahead.
My daughter snores a lot when she is sleeping, and so that's why I think she's not sleeping well. Is it that something I should be concerned about?
You know, snoring in kids is something that has been ignored until recently. Snoring by itself is not a problem. Often kids will snore and they outgrow it. However, what can be silently going on, which is of very important, great importance, is if this is affecting their breathing, the quality of their sleep can actually be quite affected. Imagine if someone is quietly waking you up a few times every hour. This can greatly affect how they feel during the day, and it's something that, you know, it warrants a closer look.
Does it answer your question, caller?
Okay, so it's not as such a big concern, right?
Well, one thing actually, I think I could probably answer both questions at the same time. The question was, is the snoring having effect on a child? And then I think
my question was, how does a parent tell whether the person child is sleeping enough or not?
Yeah. So let me try to. I think I can answer both questions at the same time.
Okay.
You know, what you want to do is see how your child is doing during the day. Now, let's say there's an adult who is sleepy. Sometimes kids who are sleepy don't look like adults when they're sleepy. So an adult, what happens if you have slept poorly? You're tired, lethargic, memory, attention, you're kind of sluggish, right? Sometimes kids look like that when they're sleepy, but also they can be a little bit different. So sometimes you can have issues with memory, attention, hyperactivity. And what some children will do when they're tired is that they start trying to overcompensate for that. So they're in fact hyperactive.
Right. Wired, we call them, right?
Yes,
we'll say the child
exactly.
looks wired.
Right. And
mm-hmm.
that's something that, you know, we've been putting a lot of attention on kids who are showing signs of ADHD and often giving them stimulant medications to keep them more alert. And do you know that a sleepy child will look exactly the same? And giving a sleepy child a medicine to keep them awake, well, of course you're going to solve that problem too. Right? So
yeah.
So what
That's
you need to do is you need to see, is your child doing getting the appropriate grades in school? Is there any sluggish or hyperactivity? If some of these problems are happening in addition to snoring, you know, then you need to go to the next step. You need to see, the first stop can always be the pediatrician to say, you know, my child snores. This is what's going on during the day. Most of the pediatricians from Fremont will tend to send those patients to me for a closer look because, I've spoken to a lot of pediatricians in Fremont and they're very savvy on sleep and they know when to take a closer look.
And we're talking to Dr. Nitun Verma, who's the medical director of the Washington Township Center for Sleep Disorders, associated with Washington Hospital, Dr.
Yes.
Verma?
Yes.
So I think we covered a little bit about what are the indicators that a child is not sleeping well during the night by looking at the behavior during the day.
Right.
Right. And
right.
Can you quickly summarize it? Hyperactivity, perhaps,
so, yes.
Lethargy.
Exactly.
So both of them. So you could be too tired or too active.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And you know, that's the interesting thing because adults are not always like that.
Right. We don't get hyperactive. We want to sleep.
Believe me, I'm not going to get hyperactive if I'm feeling tired. I want to lay down. I'm talking slower. I want to rest. Right. Kids, interestingly enough, are not like that.
Right. They'll resist, in fact, sleeping
yes.
sometimes.
And yes.
A really sleepy child, in fact, when I had my kids, both my kids, I could tell when they had gone past the time of appropriate sleep because they would get even more jumpier and hyperactive
yes.
because then you say, oh my goodness, now we have really crossed the threshold of
right.
the right appropriate
yeah,
sleep
that,
time.
That's very common. That's very common.
So we're going to take a break now. Thank you, caller. And when we come back, we'll talk a little bit age specifically about the amount of sleep kids need and what we can do to help them get that. Let's take a break and we'll be back with Dr. Nitun Verma from the Washington Center for Sleep Disorders. Welcome back. You're listening to Parent Talk. I'm your host, Vidya. Today we're talking about something that's really important, sleep, and we're talking about it with Dr. Nitun Verma, who's the medical director of the Washington Township Center for Sleep Disorders. Before the break, we talked quickly about what are the sleep trends we're seeing, and one of the trends we're seeing is that kids are having to wake up earlier and earlier to go to school, and they're having to stay up later and later to do their homework, so there's a little bit of a crunch there. And we also discussed what are the possible symptoms of the fact that your child may have a sleep issue. And one of the things we commented on was that kids display very different characteristics for lack of sleep than adults do. Sometimes lack of sleep may manifest itself as a hyperactivity rather than lethargy. So that was very interesting. If you want to catch up on this conversation and you're just tuning in, we will be putting up a recording later on indiacc.org/parenttalk. For now, let's talk about one particular aspect of sleep that's really close to my heart because I have a teenager at home. Let's talk about teenagers and less sleep. And Dr. Verma, one of the things we discussed before the break was something that is very applicable to teenagers, the fact that homework really ramps up around that time and schools do start very early. So sleep does become an issue for parents at that stage. So my first question is, how much sleep is necessary for a teenage high schooler and how does anyone balance that with academic demands?
Right. So if you were to ask how many people balance this demand, very few. So, you know, interestingly enough, we used to think that when a child is younger and as they age, every year they seem to need less sleep. But that is true except for teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
So a 12-year-old may need 8 hours, 8.5 hours of sleep a night, but a teenager will actually need 9 hours. Now, wow. Have you ever met a teenager who sleeps 9 hours a night? No.
I think they wouldn't even if they could.
Right, right. And you know, at the end of the day, you know, there are a lot of things going on after school, you know, and a lot of social activity happens late at night with texting and through the computer and everything like that. And ultimately, at the end of the day, sleep is an inconvenience the younger you are.
Yes,
right?
There's so much to do, so little
yes.
time.
Yes, and if you ask a teenager, if you could never sleep and be awake 24 hours a day, would you choose it? And almost everyone will say yes.
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And that shows that really, you know, there people are sleeping only really because they have to.
Right.
And everything else gets scheduled first. So I will see, you know, I actually get children of pediatricians coming in and seeing me for this very same issue. They're sleepy. They're tired during the day. You know, the grades are not what their parents think the kids can achieve. And ultimately, they're having, even when they're given the opportunity to sleep at night, they're not able to sleep. And then yet in the morning, they're dead tired.
Right.
Very difficult to get up and go to school. And if I remember, you know, when I was a teenager, my situation was exactly the same.
Right, right.
You know, you would go to bed at night and because, you know, you think that's the right time to sleep, yet your mind is racing. You can't slow down and you can't fall asleep. This is something that a large percentage of the teenagers who come in and see us in our clinic have. And in some ways, to give you a term that people can look up right now, I want people to look up delayed sleep phase syndrome.
Delayed sleep phase syndrome.
Syndrome.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And you know,
mouthful.
And the concept is this. You know how we have an internal clock to know when to sleep, when to be awake. So let's say if I pick you up and put you in China right now, and you sleep 8 hours on their time, you're still going to feel tired during the day. And mm-hmm. it shows that there's a clock inside their heads that's somehow misaligned with local time.
Right. Jet lag,
yes,
essentially.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that can actually happen without ever getting on a plane.
Right.
Wouldn't you like to think that the clock in your head is 24 hours to match
right.
the clock of you know, time? That's not always the case.
Mm-hmm.
So people who are say 67 years old, they may actually have 22 or 23 hours in their clock.
Does that mean fewer hours needed?
Well,
are they turning around 22 hours?
So what it means is
so
you know, you wonder why adults like to, you know, people over 50, 60, 70 years old, they like to wake up early and sleep early.
Right.
Because every day they want to wake up and sleep 1 hour earlier. So every day they feel like they're staying up 1 hour later than the day before, even if they sleep at the same time.
Really?
Right? Now, the opposite is true with teenagers. Their clock, 25, 26 hours. Now, you know, there are some differences, but this is the way I've found that has been very useful to explaining how a teenager brain works. If you're working on a day that's 25 or 26 hours long, every day, even if you wake up and sleep the same time, you are feeling as if you're put to bed an hour or two earlier.
Oh.
You feel
so
like you're
sleep
waking
later
up.
Than later
yes,
than later.
Yes. So every day will want to shift a little bit later. Right. So if you want to if a parent wants to feel how their teenager feels, wake up 2 hours earlier and go to sleep 2 hours earlier every single day for a week and see how you feel.
Okay.
That's how the teenager feels every day, waking and sleeping.
Every teenager
time.
Or some teenagers?
Most. And you know,
that's drastic.
And the idea is that, you know, most teenagers outgrow this. So, you know, when they're in their mid-20s, you know, this tends to revert. Most people will be able to wake up and sleep the same time. Some people don't outgrow it. I've had, you know, professors that, you know, educated me when I was doing my training at Stanford that never outgrew it. You know,
okay.
And they would always be sleeping in the morning no matter
how much sleep they had and
exactly.
how early they went to sleep.
Exactly.
I want to remind listeners that they can call in and ask Dr. Verma any questions that they have about their child's sleep. The number again is 510-770-1550. Now, is sleep fungible? Can you catch up? Can you make up by napping in class, after
right.
class?
Right. Let me give the answer yes and no. Okay.
Okay.
Obviously, if you take a nap at noon, most of the time you'll feel a little bit better,
okay.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Let's say a teenager is not sleeping enough during the week, sleeps in on a weekend.
Right.
Will that teenager feel better? Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. So there's some concept of that you can catch up, but in the way that sleep is not, you can't catch it up, is that if you sleep in on the weekend,
mm-hmm.
does that mean now you don't have to sleep on the weekdays afterwards? The answer is no, you know?
Okay.
So,
but then why wouldn't the logical thing to do would be to say, I am feeling better in the weekend, so
sure.
I sleep less during the week and
right. Because you know. Because the idea the concept is if you sleep a lot during the weekend, will you still be tired during the weekday if you sleep poorly? The answer is yes. So in some ways you cannot catch up in your sleep. So, you know, you said the word jet lag.
Right.
Right? You know, teenagers can often experience jet lag twice a week, never getting on a plane.
I can see why.
Right? Friday night, Saturday night, they stay up late. Monday morning is a disaster.
Oh, tell me about it. Yes. I've totally... we have a caller on the line. Let's go to that. Welcome to Parent Talk. Who's this?
Hello, Vidya and Dr. Nitin, right?
Yes, Nitin Verma.
My name is Anu.
Hi, Anu. What's your question?
So, very interesting. I myself am a... what would you say, a product? I'm an insomniac, sleep very late, but that's besides the point. Now, my daughter, who's 18, is having sleep issues.
Mm-hmm.
And it just naturally, I'm sure you were going to address it a little later, but my question was going to be, at that age, very young, 18, do you suggest any kind of sleep aids, what are called medications, or and I don't mean the, I'm scared of the, you know, so-called sleeping medicines, but there are all kinds of natural alternatives people tell me about. How do you think about these?
Right.
I think that does tie into my next question, which would have been what strategies can parents use to help their kids? So,
right.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is something that I'm asked several times a day. And you know, prescription sleep medications are really indicated for adults rather than kids. There's always lots of questions on herbal medication, herbal over-the-counter things, and see if they can work. You know, we've studied lots of things. The only thing we've seen some effect on is melatonin. Melatonin has been shown to help some people with their sleep.
Anu, I believe your radio is on. We're getting an echo in the background. Could you turn it down so that... Go ahead.
Yes. So, but here's one thing. You know, melatonin, the dose and the timing is very different depending on what your problem is. So if you have simply insomnia, meaning difficult to sleep at night, but in the morning not so much of a problem, then you can take, you know, most people can take melatonin at bedtime. However, if it's delayed sleep phase syndrome, which is different from insomnia, the timing and dose of melatonin is quite different. And, you know, people will often take a very small dose several hours before bedtime. And now, you know, the question on the table is this, insomnia versus delayed sleep phase syndrome. And that's a very difficult decision, diagnosis to make. I'll usually have people map out their sleep in a sleep diary for 2 weeks before I can, and then they come in and they see me in the office. I look at how they're waking and sleeping, how they're feeling during the day, and after that conversation, then only I can make a differentiation of which diagnosis.
You know, right, doctor. You know, I did try on my own, just knowing that melatonin is completely natural and not habit forming. At least that's what it said. I bought, I think, in pill form, and someone said it's better in liquid form. But anyway, I still have the pill. It did nothing for me. It didn't touch iota of sleep. It kept you more wired. And then I talked to some people and they said very often if melatonin does not have the suggested the right effect for you, it'll act your other way. Is that true?
So, you know, melatonin does two things. It actually, it's a sleep aid, meaning makes you sleepy, but it also changes the timing of your clock, which is a very powerful and important thing. So taking melatonin at the wrong time of the day or at the wrong dose can actually make you more of a night owl rather than help you sleep at night. And that's a very powerful concept. It's also tied into how much light you get in the morning and evening. I'll tell you, 99% of people who come and see me for these problems do not benefit from melatonin. In fact, I don't even prescribe a medication for it, not even prescription. These problems, the good news is, most of the time, are fixable without medicine. It's actually a change of habit, and I found that to be much more long-lasting in terms of success.
Anu, we are coming up on a break, and I want to thank you for your question.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Please keep listening. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll discuss some more of these aspects of sleep. But before that, I want to ask a quick question, which is, I think a lot of us do try to manage our sleep issues on our own.
Sure.
Are we doing a lot of trial and error? Should we actually be looking at a specialist? Is there a certain point where we say, no, I can't do this anymore? I mean, we had the caller trying so many things on her own.
Yeah, and the other thing is, you know, I will certainly never get a patient who says, I had one bad night of sleep and now I'm coming to see you.
Right.
You know, unfortunately, people don't know that there are people who specialize, the physicians who specialize in sleep. So what will happen is I'll usually see someone after a year or two.
They've been suffering for a year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, the good news is a lot of the things that you see on the internet are successful. Try them for 1 week, 2 weeks, and then you'll know if it works or not.
Right.
You know,
right.
If you're not getting the benefit you need, you can see a sleep physician if you know of one. They're hard to find. Otherwise, you can just see your primary care doctor, and then they can help you.
They can refer you or help you further. Okay. On that note, let's take a quick break. You're listening to Parent Talk, brought to you by the India Community Center. Now, before the break, we had a caller on the line who was talking about how she was trying melatonin on her 18-year-old, and it was not really working. And you had discussed how melatonin could actually work in a very contraindicative way sometimes. So that actually brings me to my question. So what are the strategies parents can use to help their kids?
Sure. And, you know, one thing going back to some of the callers earlier on, you know, not knowing exactly all the details of their clinical case, you know, it's not necessarily medical advice. It's general strategies that I use when I treat people. So people can, you know, come to the website that we run. Actually, it's WashingtonSleep.com.
WashingtonSleep.com.
Yeah,
okay.
And what we've actually put on there are free online quizzes that run on the website. They're medically validated, so you can, you know, if you have snoring questions, insomnia questions, they can look into that and have an idea of whether that, you know, they can be helped.
Absolutely.
Or not.
I mean, we're talking very in general terms, and
right.
We welcome callers. And with that, we have a caller on the line, so let's take our call. Welcome to Parent Talk. Who's this?
Hi, this is Sunil.
Hi, Sunil.
So I'm calling in to you know, discuss a problem about my daughter who is 7 years old.
Okay.
Right from early stages, right? So she doesn't want to sleep. So even now, it is a very difficult task for us to make her sleep. So she thinks, you know, sleeping is not at all, you know, good. So, but on the other hand, she's performing well in school, so we don't see anything very abnormal. But with gradually the age, so I see that she is slowly, you know, having hyperactive, and she's getting hyperactive. She has problems with, you know, memory also. It's a bit, you know, not that much, but she doesn't remember very few things. So we are worried whether this is normal or whether, you know, this is, she's just 7 years. So that's why I thought, you know, I'll call that.
And I want to sort of piggyback on that and ask, is it true that different kids have different sleep needs? Or is there a standard?
Right. So, you know, kids vary quite a bit on how much sleep they get. And as you get older, that range tends to narrow. So, you know, for adults, what is it? 7 to 9 hours.
Right. Right.
And as the younger you go, in general, people need more sleep, but the variation can be quite significant. You know, with your 7-year-old daughter, it is very common, but it's not normal. Right. So what I'm trying to say is that many 7-year-olds are not getting enough sleep at night, and probably what you have is a very intelligent daughter. Right. So what she's doing is, you know, she may not be running on 100%, but whatever she's running on is still good enough to get good grades. So that's great. Right. But inevitably, school is going to become harder.
Harder and harder as she goes older.
And you don't want to put her in a position where she's not at her best. And it definitely sounds like she's not getting enough sleep if you're showing that, you know, she has some issues of being tired or hyperactive during the day. So, you know, you want her to be at her best, and she'll be happier when you do that. Right. When I sit down with a parent, I like to see the whole family in the office for a visit like this, and we spend a good amount of time, 30-35 minutes, much longer than a typical doctor's visit, because I need to get everyone on board and help them understand that, hey, sleep is really important, and if you don't sleep enough, you can function now, but life is going to get more difficult as time goes on. You know, what I would do is sit down and figure out what kind of habits are going on at night and try to make them sleep friendly. Right.
So what are those? Yeah.
That's similar to the question that you had for me. What can people do? And now, in general, there are things you can do at night. There are things you can do during the day. And both are very important. One thing that happens at night is that you need to help your daughter receive this. Her brain needs to receive the signals that it's the right time to sleep. So 3 hours before bedtime, you need to start dimming the lights, dimming the volume. Now, she doesn't have to live in a cave or anything like that. Often, you know, the kids get nervous when I talk like this. But, you know, iPhones, iPads, screens, you need to make them dim. The overhead lights, you need to make them dim, starting 3 hours before bedtime. And what happens is, you know, there are nerves that go from your eyeballs to a different part of your brain, right in the center of the brain, and that actually goes directly to the clock. Okay, so people who are blind, provided they still have their eyes, the advice I'm telling works. Okay, so if it can work for a blind person, it's definitely going to work for someone who can see. So 3 hours, you're creating a dim, dark, cool environment, so their brain gets the signal to sleep. If you have an environment that's running 100 miles per hour at night, of course the brain is not getting the signals.
So does that mean detaching from electronic things before bedtime?
You know, you're doing it as much as possible. Let me tell you what I have plugged in, you know, in my bedroom. I'll tell you what's plugged in. A lamp.
That's it?
That's it. Okay. No mm-hmm. TV. I don't have a TV in there. I don't have a computer or anything like that. And you know, I sleep well. Mm-hmm. Now, that was not always the case, and my environment was not always like that, but it's necessary. And for a 7-year-old, extremely necessary. You know, the kids will be unhappy when I say, you know, you're getting the TV out of there and that sort of thing. But, you know, the bedroom has to be a calm environment. Let me tell you how most teenagers or elementary school students live. At night, right before they go to sleep, their mind is going 100 miles per hour, bright lights, all screens full blast, you know, the texting away or whatever.
Music is blasting sometimes for the older kid.
And then,
yes.
How come they can't sleep at night? Yet, in the morning, how are they waking up? In as dark of an environment as possible, as cool, dim, calm, soothing environment.
Right.
So all of the signals are going to the brain that says, be awake at night, be sleepy in the morning. So of course they have difficulty waking
right.
and sleeping,
that
right?
That makes common sense,
right?
Yeah.
So what I do when I sit down, I go through all of their habits, their routines, and in general what I'm trying to do is flip them. I'm giving the morning routine at night, dim, dark, cool, calming environment in the evening, and then the opposite in the morning.
So you want the blinds up,
yes.
lights on.
Yes.
You know, the room needs to be really bright when they need to wake up. So maybe
exactly.
turn on the light.
Exactly. Open up the shades. Now, you know, if you know, when my parents did that to me when I was 6 or 7, you know what I do? I close my eyes a little bit. You know, so I'm squinting, so less light goes in.
Right.
And
you
that
burrow under
the
blanket
yes,
or whatever.
Exactly.
Right.
So you know, the young person wants to do what's comfortable. Right, be running 100 miles per hour at night and being too sleepy in the morning. So you would gravitate towards an environment that accelerates that problem, right? So what you have to do is you have to swap those morning and nighttime routines. And believe me, if you do everything I say, I guarantee you she's not going to sleep any better tonight. Okay, this is not a right away solution. This takes time. People will do this for a few weeks and then start to see the benefit.
And Sunil, thank you for your call. I also want to mention that if it's a recurring problem, you absolutely should consult your primary care physician, and they would do something like refer you to a doctor like Dr. Verma. And that brings me to my, you know, when he said she doesn't like to go to sleep at night, and I'm wondering what is an appropriate bedtime? Is it something that we make up as parents, or is it a natural one?
So that's an interesting question. If you would have asked me a year ago, I would have said it was by habit. And then I learned some new material. They were doing some research at a conference that I attended to a few months ago, and I changed my answer because some new information has come out. And actually, there is some inbuilt times for most kids that if they go to bed before, they sleep better. So,
okay.
And that number is different per country. I don't know why. You know,
okay.
That's something we have
so
to
what
know.
Do we have in the Bay yeah. Area?
Magic number.
Magic
in
number.
North America, 9 p.m. for young kids.
Okay. How
you
young?
Know, so, you know, really you're talking like 10 or 11 or below, right?
Okay.
So if you look at kids who are trying to sleep after 9 p.m., they're typically not sleeping as well. More difficulty falling asleep. You know, maybe there's a difficult routine of how to get the parents to get the kids to go to bed. And before 9 p.m., it's a lot easier. And you know, we touched on this a little bit before, and it makes sense if you put these two things together. You know how I was saying that, you know, sometimes when kids are really tired, what happens? They become hyperactive and they become more wired.
Mm-hmm.
And that actually, even though they're tired, they have a difficulty falling asleep. So that is probably part of the reason why the 9 p.m. number is important. The kids are going to bed later. There may be some hyperactivity that's building up gradually,
right.
And now it's difficult to sleep. Before 9 p.m., it's not so much of a problem, right?
What about meal times before 9 p.m.? Is right. Do you need to have a break? Do you need to have a big gap between their dinner time and the bedtime? The traditional grandmother's the thing is have a glass of milk and it'll help you sleep better. Are those validity?
Milk has some hormones that sometimes can help people sleep. That's why milk traditionally has been relatively helpful. The timing of dinner is more important for adults than for kids, because a lot of times, especially if you're considering the audience, if you're probably eating a meal with lots of spices, and potentially high fat content late at night before you go to sleep. And for adults, that can affect them because it can cause some reflux that they may not even know it's happening.
Well, this happens after they sleep,
yes,
after they go to bed.
When does the stomach make the most acid? It's late at night.
Right.
I don't know why the body does this, but it can impact reflux and difficulty falling asleep. That's more of a problem for adults than for kids.
Okay.
In general, you don't need to eat too much food at night. Something I'll tell you, there's been a trend in the last 50 or 60 years for the breakfast to become smaller and the dinners to become bigger.
Right,
but our body's
right.
not designed for that,
right,
that can impact sleep quality.
Right. So on that note, let's take another quick break. When we come back, really important stuff for parents of little kids. Dr. Verma assures me that he has a foolproof method for getting kids' babies to sleep through the night. Yes, I'm putting you on the spot. And we'll come back from a break and tackle some of that. Welcome back to Parent Talk. Today we are talking with Dr. Nitun Verma about the importance of sleep and developing good sleeping habits in our kids. And we talked about teenagers before the break. I guess that's certainly a point of a great deal of stress for parents. But the other time when parents are really stressed about sleep and it's a big issue is when you have babies, and they tend to disrupt the entire household sleep routines. And in this segment, I want to talk a little bit about how the parents and the child can both get a decent amount of sleep, if there are any strategies for that. If you're just tuning in and want to listen to the rest of the show, a recording will be up at indiacc.org/parent-talk. That's one word, parent talk. Dr. Verma, again, in babies, you see a great deal of difference in sleep patterns. Is there a normal there?
No, I can tell you overall trends, when babies are just born, they're sleeping, many hours in a day, 18, 19 hours, and it tends to trend off over time. Now, there is a good amount of variation, and the younger you go, the bigger the variation of hours of sleep.
Right.
So, the newborn baby who's only sleeping 6 or 7 hours, this is a great stress for the parents, because
right.
now the parents cannot do anything.
Correct.
Right? And think about first week or two, especially the parents who are breastfeeding, it takes 30, 45 minutes to feed, the baby sleeps for 10 minutes and now is up, right?
Right.
So where does that leave the mother? 10 minutes of sleep, every hour, and that is
major
very difficult, very
mm-hmm.
difficult. And, I get asked all the time, how much sleep does a baby need? And we really don't know, because of the variation is so high. In general, if you want to look at, a one-month child, it's 16 hours. By 9 months, it's 14. And, even at 2 or 3 years of age, the kids need 12, 13 hours of sleep. If you add up naps and everything like that.
That's quite a bit. So I have two questions. One is, how does then the parent get rest around the kid's schedule? How do we maximize or optimize our rest? And the second thing is there an age when you start to train them to sleep more, longer hours, and is there a way to do that?
Yeah, in general, starting at 4 months, you can start to do different things to help them sleep, and I'll talk about that in a second. And then at 6 months of age is when they can start thinking about sleeping until 5 a.m., which is, that's when, the parents are very happy with that. When you're trying to get a child to sleep a little bit longer, 4 months is when you start. And, there are different methods, and all of them have their proponents and opponents,
Mm-hmm.
I'm a fan of this thing called the Ferber method. It's probably, helping a child sleep is like taking a Band-Aid off. Do you want to choose the option that takes a very long time that's less painful?
Mm-hmm.
Or do you want to try something that's a little bit more stressful, but it works very quickly? Ferber method is probably the most extreme end where, one weekend, 1 week, you can solve the problem. And you can buy the book. It's very popular. And if you Google it, you're going to find lots of pro and cons with it. It's something that my sister has a 6-month-old child. She did not like the advice that this Ferber method was offering. Mm-hmm. Her husband did.
And briefly, I just want to touch on that. It's a Ferber method, F-E-R-B-E-R, and it does involve some crying on the part of the child and being ignored for a bit.
Now,
so definitely,
yeah,
that's an issue.
At the same time, it's not the concept is not to let your baby cry and become psychological. particularly, you know, affected by it. The idea is that, you know, at 4 months, they can start soothing themselves and putting themselves asleep. So, you know, I'll give you a small snapshot. It's not enough for you to actually go and start working. You have to read the book. But the concept is, you know, when you first start, you know, you let a baby cry for a short amount of time. You go in there, you soothe them, let them go back to sleep. And then every day, you're starting to prolong that time a little bit. So it's not traumatic for the baby, and it allows the baby the chance to fix themselves.
Absolutely. I think it's something that doesn't come naturally to Indian parents who are used to being a lot more close and bonded with their kids. So that it's certainly something difficult, but even I've heard a lot of parents say that it was painful, but it was a successful method. So the analogy to ripping a band-aid off is perfect because I think that it is a really difficult thing to do.
And especially for the new parent, it's a very difficult issue.
So, I have one last question, which is, what is a good time to get your child started on waking themselves up and not having the parent do the waking? Because again, Indian parents, we will do it till the child is out of the house.
Right.
So, but is it a good idea to let the child?
Yeah, you know, it's a good idea to let the child wake themselves up if they're able to wake up at a reasonable time to go to school. I'll tell you what my father did when I was in high school. You know, he gives me 3 warnings and then puts water on my head, right? And that's bulletproof in terms of solving the problem. You know, it has to be a combination of things you do at night and in the morning, so they're sleeping early
enough. So you're not forcing the issue.
Yes.
You're making it easier for them to...
And these things take, you know, a few weeks of doing every day before you see the benefit. That's where the confusion often comes from.
You have to be consistent and do it long enough.
Yes.
Well, and of course, if you have a problem that's been recurring, don't try to solve it yourself. It's worth going to your doctor. It's a big issue. It affects so much, such a big part of our lives. And definitely take professional help. And of course, you have WashingtonSleep.com. It's a great place to, it's a great website to go to and take a quiz, whether it is on behalf of your child or is on behalf of yourself, to see whether your sleep is appropriate and whether you or your child is getting enough sleep. Once again, the website is WashingtonSleep.com. That's all for our show today. To listen to this show's recording and past shows, go to indiacc.org/parenttalk. And if you have an idea to share, do write to me at radio@indiacc.org. Thank you, Dr. Nitin Verma, for being with us today and sharing your insights. The show producer is Saad Jaffrey, and the theme tune was composed by Naren Pradhan. Tune in same time, same place next week for another live show on parenting. Till then, bye-bye.